It may be invisible to some or ever present to others, but trauma entangles us all. Welcome to Traumatize, brought to you by Volare. Traumatize is a podcast that creates space and conversations to untangle the societal knots that keep us from addressing trauma after crime. For you, we want this podcast to be an experience, one where you leave understanding how you can be a crossing point to minimize the deeply painful and costly consequences of trauma, no matter who you are.
Welcome back to Traumatize, where we believe trauma is a common thread of the human connection. I am Bridget Stumpf, and as always, I'm here with my co-host, Lindsay Silverberg.
Hey, everybody. Well, welcome back. Each season of Traumatize gives us a chance to reflect on the work we've done and where that work will lead us. This past year at Volare, the word kept surfacing for us again and again. That was resiliency. Not only the resiliency that we teach, but the resiliency we embody as an organization, as a team, and as a community anchored in hope. Over the past year, Volare continued to expand into trauma education initiatives. We were reaching more communities, more institutions, and more systems ready for meaningful change. We've partnered with our largest corporation yet, over 70,000 employees, to bring trauma-informed knowledge to the workforce for those whose influence touches communities across the country. Bridget and I had the incredible opportunity this year to travel to Hawaii to support the Sexual Assault Response Team of Hawaii, offering training to responders whose work requires both steadiness and deep compassion. We were deeply honored recently to receive the UNA-NCA Community Human Rights Award. It's a recognition that reflects the courage, clarity, and commitment shared by our staff, board, and partners. And if listeners didn't catch the news yet, we also celebrated a big milestone. Traumatize received a Purple Ribbon Award for Outstanding Podcast focused on addressing issues related to domestic violence. These affirmations really remind us of why this platform matters.
Yeah, thanks for filling folks in, Lindsay, and welcome to season 4 of the podcast. Of course, our work at Volare really reminds us all the time how resiliency shows up both in practice, but also in guiding principle. And I've been thinking about this a lot as we move into this next phase of our organization, but also just this next year of our lives. And here comes Mitty to say hello. And of course, this year, in addition to all the wonderful things that you noted, Lindsay, it brought some challenges, but also, I think, bold opportunities that we're excited about. And I know our team behind the scenes here, Naida, who heads up our engagement, is also probably feeling this is a bit of a stretch, bold goal, but we are going to be advancing our jury education campaign, which is a project grounded in contemporary neuroscience and trauma awareness, and really thinking about how we can shift these long-term narratives about credibility and memory and realign them with what we now know to be true about how survivors of trauma recall memories and how that impacts their behavior. So really excited to move that forward. And of course, our team continues to serve folks who have lived through some of the hardest things you can imagine. And internally, we are trying to stay grounded amidst all of the strain of just what it means to do this work day in and day out. And it's been a year of cultivating connection across these moments. Of course, always returning again and again to our commitment to serve survivors with clarity and compassion. And our vision is really to build a world where resiliency is accessible at every level, from not just the individuals that we often support, but to institutions that intersect with folks every single day. And this year really reinforced why this vision of resiliency matters for communities, but also for us, for our teams that do this work, and for you, Lindsay, as a person in this world, and me too. And I want to talk a little bit about resiliency and how I have come to reframe what it means in these conversations and in the work. It's really powerful, of course, but it has this almost like shadow side that I just want to flag as we go into the conversations with our guests this season. We often survive difficulty in our brains and our bodies. They learn how we can endure that. And sometimes even things we never thought we could. It just builds confidence, grit, problem-solving ability. Resiliency is so powerful. But it can also rewire us in these really sort of subtle and visible ways. And each time we push through hardship, our nervous system, it recalibrates what starts to feel normal. And so kind of those chronic ongoing stressors can really add up over time. And because we've survived last time, we assume we can, and we actually should be surviving at all times. And this is where resiliency becomes this kind of double-edged sword. And instead of using resiliency to recover, we sometimes use it to override limits. And I just want to be really conscious as we go into these conversations and the work that we do to think about how our capacity expands when we're resilient, but sometimes our tolerance for overload does too. And in short, I'm really trying to stay grounded in this idea that true resiliency isn't about getting through hard things. It's about knowing when pushing forward builds us and when it can also slowly break us. So I'm excited to have a bit more nuanced dialogue around that concept and that idea as we move into season four. And Lindsay, I'm wanting to hear a little bit more about what you've been up to the past year and what you're feeling excited about.
Yeah, I think that's such a beautiful flag, Bridget, about resiliency. We talk about that a lot when we talk about gratitude and how gratitude isn't this idea of like toxic positivity, right? That you don't just power through it. So I'm excited to talk to the guests that we have coming on. They have some really interesting backgrounds that we'll get into a little bit more later. It's wild to think that a year has gone by. I don't know how that happened so fast. What have I been up to over the last year? I mean, I've had the honor and privilege of continuing to do work with the National Organization for Victim Advocacy, NOVA, where I sit on the committee that helps review credentialing of advocates to help professionalize our field, make sure that everyone's sticking with standards and ethics that matter when we're serving survivors. Bridget and I had the opportunity this last year to teach a class at Arizona State University's law school based in DC on trauma and the law. And I will say it was like probably one of the highlights of my year. It's really motivating to see the generation younger than us coming in and feeling optimistic and wanting to create change. And it just like gives me energy that I don't think I always am able to tap into in other places. So that was a pretty incredible experience. What about you? What have you been up to this past year?
Yeah, I love the teaching one. It's just so cool to be inspired by like the future leaders like coming in. And it gives me a lot of hope for my own kids and kind of their future too, to see some of these future leaders. I focused a little bit in thinking about this on professional kind of milestones that we hit as an organization. And for me, it was really impactful to see the launch of our Survivors Rights Watch project. And this is a program because of how DC courts are operating, where folks can volunteer time to watch proceedings in the courtroom and monitor judges and prosecutors and how they are or are not complying with the Federal Crime Victims Rights Act. And it's just such a cool project because of how DC is so uniquely situated. These volunteers are actually giving us a sense of the landscape of CVR application that applies across the country in federal courts. So really excited to learn from that and get people more engaged in our work from an accountability and oversight perspective in a really exciting way. And we talked about this a little bit, but we might be able to share more in the coming weeks, maybe months, maybe days, who knows, about the formal evaluation of our trauma-informed lawyering training that we did in partnership with Dr. Middle, and who's one of our board members and also a clinical professor at University of Maryland. And just more recently, we talked a little bit when Wade joined us from the cast of Water for Elephants about our partnership with the show on Broadway. But as they went on national tour, our team here has worked to ensure that audience members that go see the show, hopefully at a city near you, still get information about how you can support a loved one in your life who may have experienced trauma through experiences like domestic violence. So excited to see that information still being accessible in those kind of more entertainment spaces that I think are often surprising to folks. But I have also thought a little bit about what kind of the year has meant for me personally as we move into this kind of new phase. And, you know, part of the inspiration for this season was how do we explore the roots of trauma and then some of those branches that are these like emerging approaches in resiliency. And this idea was to really focus on where we see trauma exposure throughout the spectrum of our life. And I've kind of thought about childhood, young adulthood, and now parenthood. Because personally, something I think about a lot right now is as a parent, how we can work to both build resiliency, but also confidence in our children. And this is just something that's been playing on a reel in my mind over the last couple of months, kind of highlighted over the break where we get to spend a lot of quality time with our kids. And, you know, confidence and resiliency are so deeply connected in ways I've never really thought about until more recently, but they're not the same thing, right? I think about confidence as kind of a kid's belief that like, I can do this, right? It's like that belief in themselves to take on a task, where resiliency is more about their capacity for hardship. I can handle this even if it's hard, right? Like the continuing the grit of I can do this when it gets difficult and really challenging. And of course, in healthy development, confidence and resiliency, they kind of become this feedback loop for each other that support each other in healthy ways. And I think we know that this works best when adults are acting as scaffolding around a child's life and experience, not as the rescuers. And I'm very aware that like my tendency as a parent is to rescue. And so I've really been thinking about what is the right balance and what's the goal I should have in my mind when I'm wanting to adequately push my kids to have capacity for hardship, obviously not create it for them, but not at the risk of impacting their kind of internal narrative around success versus survival and that balance of resiliency and confidence. It's something I recently, Lindsay, was talking to one of our neighborhood friends, a family that lives down the street. They shared sort of their common struggle with their own kids. And I think it's this invisible burden that so many parents carry about building our kids' confidence in appropriate and like healthy ways, and not necessarily understanding like what does resiliency look like as a tool and how do we build that tool as parents for our kids. So I'm really excited to think more about this and dive into it a little bit deeper with some of the cool guests that we have joining this season.
Yeah, you and I actually had a conversation recently about the future of two of our children being in the same grade and what that means for them when they graduate high school. It's a fascinating thing, right? Because I think you and I come at this from a very similar perspective of like knowing that we live in a world where we are not always going to be there to stop hard things or bad things happening to them. And how do we create that ability, that resiliency to get through it? And so I think that'll be a fun thing to talk about as we, it's not easy. And I think there's a lot of people out there that probably struggle with it, and some that we wish maybe adults that struggled more with helping build resiliency. That could be a whole nother episode. But, you know, I think given all of that, we have some pretty incredible guests that are going to help us deep dive into the spaces and places where we might not expect resiliency and trauma and change to come up.
Yeah, Lindsay, I know for this season, we're going to be exploring kind of the champions of change, maybe people who practice reshaping how we understand trauma, healing, resiliency in really unique ways. Maybe I'll just start by highlighting a couple of the conversations I'm really looking forward to having, and then you can share some from your perspective. I am really excited to explore kind of this novel, ethical, and innovative approaches to trauma that help us understand both challenges and possibilities that we confront in our lifetime. And this, for me, will kind of bring us to inviting incredible voices to join this season who are pushing the boundaries of how we think about these issues and transforming and reimagining our concepts of trauma and resiliency. So one of those guests is a licensed psychologist and board-certified holistic nutritionalist whose work really bridges kind of this mind-body medicine and expressive arts and trauma science overlap of the Venn diagrams. And so personally, I'll be really excited to talk with them more about some of these creative healing ideas that are around and connected to expressive arts. I also am excited to be joined by an associate professor at the University of Sydney, whose interdisciplinary work really shines a light on how systems themselves create conditions of trauma, especially for migrants and communities navigating structural power imbalances. So we'll examine how systemic trauma can become embedded across generations, really through policy. And then how do we use that kind of policy advocacy to carve out healing pathways and what it means to really reimagine resilient communities at the structural level, not just kind of that individual personal experience. So a few highlights to start thinking about so you can set your reminder to tune into Traumatize. And Lindsay, who are you looking forward to talking with?
Yeah, I think from a high level, I'm really interested to talk about the imprint that trauma leaves on the body and the relationship that that has with things like anxiety, perfectionism, fawning, survival responses. Even as Bridget and I have talked about in past seasons, we believe, right, laughing as sort of maybe a fawning response. And how specifically that response is misunderstood. So that is going to be really cool. Some of the guests that I think are going to highlight those things is we're going to be joined by a researcher, a designer, and a community-based technologist whose work is really rooted in healing-centered frameworks, particularly when working with youth in foster care experiences who have complex trauma backgrounds. So that's a lot of words, and her research really focuses on creating this socio-digital healing interventions that blend things like technology and art and support emotional awareness. That guest I'm in particular really excited to.
Very relevant for parents too.
Oh, 100%. I'm also really excited to talk to a guest who is a Nigerian American healer and a movement strategist. She's an artist whose leadership in the healing justice movement has been transformative for communities across the country and has this really cool founded a thing called Harriet's Apothecary, and it's a healing village inspired by abolitionist legacies. So we're going to look at and talk through about how trauma is not just something that's held individually, right? But really something that's held in our lineages, in cultures, in systems. I think it'll be very relevant to the way that we think about trauma and healing as not only impacting an individual person, but really the community abroad.
Yeah, that's exciting. And we try to kind of hover around a theme every season. And Lindsay, I'm curious kind of how you're thinking about this season, thinking about the roots of trauma and some of the emerging healing and I think really novel approaches to resiliency. What does that sort of mean for you?
I think this season, for me, it's about celebrating that novelty. It's taking and looking at the ways that people take old pain, right, and create something new from it. And we're going to be exploring, you know, new practices and new narratives, new visions, not only for an individual, but really their communities. And so the fact that we get the opportunity, one, to learn from folks that have these sort of novel practices, ideas, and abilities to help people take that old pain is going to be a really beautiful thing to explore.
Yeah. I'm also thinking about sort of like, what am I curious about for this season? And I'm having this kind of new thought that is not something I had planned to talk about, Lindsay, when we came into the conversation, but I was sharing with you recently how I can't remember the researcher's name. We'll have to flag it in the notes, but it's a researcher who talks about studies on popularity or really likability. And I shared this clip with my kids about how the one kind of like real study on this found that the most common denominator for the most likable people, and these were kids, right? And they're asking peers, wasn't anything from like achievements, sports, good looks. It wasn't all of the sort of like common things we think about. When they got down to like brass tacks, the most likable people were the people who had the longest list of people they liked. And she's done some really interesting kind of communication strategies that she shared, and I've kind of started following her work a little bit more. And she's talked about the power of a communicator when we are less seen, right? Like we're all hardwired to go in and be like, I want to be the person that is making people feel really excited. I want to be the funny person. I want to be, and she actually talks about how from a likability and communications perspective, sometimes people walk away having a better connection with us or a better feeling about us when we helped them feel like the strongest communicator in the room. So being sort of less seen, less visible. And this is something I'm excited about this season, kind of this thing that I'm trying to be more conscious of, that sometimes the greatest champions of change, they're not always the loud or most visible people in the room. Sometimes they are the kind of quiet caretakers that are tending the roots of the thing we're trying to sort of cultivate together, and doing this kind of quiet, consistent work beneath the surface that's not always seen or visible. And I think that's true when we think about trauma healing and resiliency. I think it's also true when we think about our role in leadership and connection with people in my relationships and in my own lives, and wanting to have a conscious awareness of the places that maybe I'm hardwired to think I need to be more seen to create connection, and really the opposite is true. So that's something I'm thinking about in the conversations we're going into, and we'll really try to practice myself, which is hard for me as someone who the nervous pause is very difficult for me. So this is definitely something I'm going to have to practice.
As Naida affectionately calls us, the weirdly productive ramblers.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know that to be true. Actually, you made me think about somebody, a joint person in our life who just said, oh, I wasn't able to meet up with someone because I tend to be, we both, her and this other person tend to be the people in their social circles that everybody sort of leans on for social support. And I'm like, yeah, that's a real thing, right? That caretaking position, that person exists. And so that's fascinating. We will find out who the researcher was that was talking about popularity, because you and I have spent a bit talking about that and the impact of that.
Yeah. And it kind of brings us full circle. Like, as we're closing out, I'm going back to this concept of resiliency, of like the beauty of being able to push through hard things. But like you're talking about this caretaker, right? Like the burden of being a resilient person is like the sort of higher risk of breaking, right? Like, how do we carry both of those things as caretakers? And of course, as always, so grateful for the folks that do listen in. We hope to bring you some nuggets, maybe even some throwbacks and reminders of past conversations that when we've encountered folks in the wild, people have really uplifted as being meaningful for them. And of course, as you're joining us, you can listen to season 4 by subscribing, rating, and always reviewing the Traumatized podcast wherever you do listen.
We cannot thank you enough for joining us for another season, and we hope that you'll join us for more Untangling.
This episode of Traumatize is over, but this podcast is just one of our many resources. Volare welcomes all survivors of crime and their supporters, so please visit us at volare-empowers.org to learn more about how to access our trauma education and how to partner with us to create empowering experiences for survivors.